T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Really don't mind if you sit this one out. My words, but a whisper.
Hey, it's Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. It is my distinct honor and pleasure to speak with a man whose music we all know and love, and he is Ian Anderson. Most of you know him best from Jethro Tull, of course, and those of you who've heard Ian Anderson interview before know that he has eclectic tastes, a keen mind, an intellect. Ian Anderson, so delighted you can join us today, and I hate to start off with a bummer of a question, but my first question revolves around the lung condition you've recently revealed. Without impinging on your privacy, would you like to explain that?
Yeah, well, it was during an interview with Dan Rather last September when we recorded an interview at the end of the last US tour, and he seemed like a nice guy. He also seemed to be the kind of guy that, you know, trustworthy, sensitive soul. I decided, since he asked me how I was, to share with him something that I'd not really discussed in public, but all the people around me, band and crew and everybody else, know that some... 3.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and asthma. And luckily, these were both in a very early stage. And so I've, you know, with medication, care, and attention, I've managed to keep it from deteriorating during these last 3 years, which is good. But it has in the past been an issue, because it means that if I catch a cold virus, a rhinovirus, then I would be likely to have 4 to 6 weeks of bronchial disturbance. You know, in other words, it just didn't clear up, and you have a really, you know, bad bronchial chest for a while until it finally cleared. That's not much fun when you're on the road and touring and you're struggling every night to do your 2 hours of aerobics, which of course is really what it is, being a flute player and a singer. You know, you've really got to battle through it. But in a way, that's quite a good thing. It's definitely the case that you really do need to exercise the lungs, push yourself to the limit, and don't just sit down like a potato in front of your computer all day, which is exactly what I'm doing at the moment.
Well, that...
because I'm transcribing 331 songs for a collective lyric book that I'm working on at the moment, one of those projects that I've been putting off, but now that I have a lot of time on my hands when I'm not on tour due to the current pandemic, then I'm tackling a few projects that I want to get done. So yes, I'm fine, feeling fine, and I haven't had a bug of any sort for since last March, I think, was the last time I had a cold and a bad chest. But that's, 13, 14, 15 months or whatever it is. So I'm in pretty good shape. Nothing to get in a panic about. I mean, on the bright side, you see, I don't have hemorrhoids. I don't have erectile dysfunction. You know, the world is looking good.
Well, I'd like to add, Ian Anderson is talking for himself on that front on News Radio 930 WBEN. Ian, it's somewhat of a paradox, though, because on the one hand, the doctors have told you to carry on, to bugger on, so to speak, to do what you've got to do and not let it interfere with you, and to get exercise and do all those aerobic things that are involved in performing. But on the other hand, when you're dealing with a chronic situation that can lead to depression and also physical exhaustion, when do you know when enough is enough?
Well, I don't. I'm the kind of guy who just has to keep going on, and you recognize your body's signs. I think it's like being any kind of a sports person, perhaps, who has to go out and play tennis for 3 hours or play football or do anything that's strenuous. You know, you recognize your body's signals, and you just don't quite push it to that point where you fall over. But it's really not any worse than it has been for many, many years. I mean, I started having chest problems when I was in my 20s. I used to get throat infections, chest infections. It's an Achilles heel. So it's not something that is new in my life. And the other thing is that I'm a sort of very strict and serious practitioner of personal hygiene. And I've been traveling with face masks, gels, sprays for years. And life now is just the same. You know, nothing is different in my life. It's another day in the office, really, being, washing my hands 20 times a day and cleaning doorknobs and TV controllers and computer keyboards and phones and anything that anybody might have touched, including my own family, because, of course, you can never really be too careful that somebody doesn't pick up something and pass it on. So, yeah, we're all pretty scrupulous about that over here. Maybe a little more so than some people are in Michigan or in Boston, I've been reading recently.
Indeed. Well, hygiene, of course, as you mentioned, is one of the keys in dealing with this pandemic, and doing what you do for a living and your obvious love of performing on stage. Given where we are with this pandemic and all of the unknowns, even among the best minds in medicine as to what they're dealing with and the causes, and goodness knows when we're going to see a treatment, what do you think the future of performing live music is going to be, whether it's an act like yours or a local club band?
Well, I think it's a little early to really be able to answer that question in any detail, but I certainly for the next months or maybe even years, the world as we knew it has changed. And what we don't know at the moment that is quite crucial is whether or not, having had the disease and survived, whether you have antibodies that will mean that you have medium to long-term immunity. We don't know the answer to that yet. We also don't know whether or not a vaccine, if and when a or a number of vaccines do become available, will they confer 60% immunity, 70%, 8%? They won't be. You know, we base it on vaccines for other conditions, like the common flu, for example, which have a vaccine, or every year a number of vaccines are produced, and they have somewhere between 30 and 70% efficacy. That's not great, especially for older people. Flu is a very serious condition, the coronavirus, which is a killer, and to have a 70% immunity would be good. Unfortunately, for the elderly, especially those with underlying health conditions, that could be as low as 30% for a flu vaccine. So, you know, it's worth grabbing with both hands. I mean, I get the flu vaccine every year, but luckily I've not had flu for a long, long time. But that's, again, probably due to my being very, very careful. I travel alone, I eat alone, I tend not to be mixing when I'm out and about.
We're speaking with Ian Anderson on News Radio 930 WBEN in Buffalo. Ian, anyone who's watched videos of your performing on stage or seen you live in concert, one of the things that strikes an audience member is your absolute love and affinity for performing. And I'm wondering if that's an affinity and a joy which comes from a personal inner fulfillment, or does it have more to do with the joy you're giving other people through your music, or is it a combination of the two?
I think primarily it goes back to my early years when I was at school and decided that perhaps a career in art and the painterly arts would be a a thing to strive for, so I went off to art school, and while I was at art school, I also studied photography as well as drawing, painting, and then discovered music. And music was a more immediate form of expression, which appealed to me. That it was a performing, a live, in real time way of doing things, whereas painting a picture can take you weeks or months, and it may only be after you're dead and gone that your talents and true place in the universe is recognized. So music, on the other hand, is an immediate response from an audience who either like you or loathe you or just really don't care either way. And that, of course, is very challenging, very exciting, but it has mostly to do with the performance in terms of what it means to me. You know, I don't go out there to make everybody else happy. I'm going out there to make me happy. It seems to me very important that if you go out to pursue your own reward, then it's an honest performance. But if you go out there to sort of pull all the tricks in the book, you know, clap your hands and join in, and you just do the sort of cheesy hits or whatever, then that's a bit of a cop out. I don't really think I could do that. It might make people happy, but it's not my way of performing. I like to challenge myself and perhaps also challenge the audience, because some of the music is not straight ahead and perhaps instantly rewarding in the sense of foot tapping or singing along. So, you know, I'm out there to do it for me. And the fact that I'm doing it in this context where an audience, in a rather voyeuristic way, are watching me having a good time. And if they have a good time, that's great. We all made the right decision to come there at the same time on that night. But on the other hand, you know, I would be probably, as I am when I'm not on the road, I'm playing for my own enjoyment and practicing or rehearsing or writing some music or doing what I do. I'm doing it for me, and I think it's got to be the first driving force, that you actually go out there for yourself, and then other people they get their vicarious pleasure from buying a ticket and coming to a show. So that's my philosophy, is the love of performing is the love of what I get out of it at the moment of doing it. And of course, it doesn't always go that well. Sometimes, you know, I leave the stage filled with self-loathing, and that's a feeling that can last for up to 30 or 40 seconds before somebody presses a cold beer in my hand and I can live to fight another day.
Now, under what circumstances would you, Ian Anderson, of all people, leave the stage with self-loathing?
Well, whenever you feel that you fell short of what you had to do, and it may be... maybe circumstances beyond your control. You know, it could be temperature, it could be having an illness, it could be perhaps technical issues that have come into play. It could be lots of things that mean you've fallen short of what you think is your acceptable level of performance. But you know, it shouldn't always be a triumphant return to the dressing room, punching the air and slapping the bass player around the back and sharing this wonderful moment of camaraderie and victory. Sometimes it is rather, you know, a little solitary and down, and, you know, five, 10 minutes later, we, you know, usually gather together and have a glass of wine or whatever we're going to do in a room backstage, and those things tend to be forgotten, and we put it behind us and resolve next night it's a bit better. I think you can always probably assume, really, that somebody in the band or crew has had a rotten night for whatever reason. You know, it's just going to happen. For somebody, it's just not, you know, it's not going to be that great. And I think you do share that moment where you cheer each other up and have that little moment. I mean, it is just a short moment, since none of us drink very much, but we do enjoy a glass of wine or a beer and then wend our way back to a good night's sleep, since most of us are early to bed and early to rise in our world. Rock and roll animals at all.
I'm going to presume that you're something of a perfectionist. Is that correct? And is it a blessing or a curse?
Well, I'm certainly not a perfectionist, because I'm all too aware that is just not really achievable. That doesn't stop me trying. You know, I mean, of course, that's what you're after, is doing a perfect show, making a perfect record, writing a perfect song. But for one reason or another, you get used to the fact that you've probably not quite nailed it the way you hoped you would. And that's a driving force. You know, it's part of what I think makes it all rather exciting, that you're pushing towards something, even knowing that you're never really going to get to the top of the mountain. But getting close to the top is, the view is pretty good.
You know, I wanted to ask you this, and that is this. People look at you and your work over the years.
Sitting on the park bench, eyeing little girls with bad intent.
We are in absolute awe. Like, we look at the Beatles or Pink Floyd or whomever, and we just think that you are on an entirely different level than the normal run-of-the-mill performer. Are there people to whom you might listen and say, wow, that is just ethereal. That's the sound angels could make if they would play.
Well, if you've ever been the opening act for Led Zeppelin, then you can answer that question as easily as I would. Yes, if you're in the presence of superior skills and talent, then you do have to doff your cap and say, hey, maybe one day I might get somewhere close to that. But yeah, for sure, there's lots of other performing artists that have been models of inspiration for me, in the sense of thinking, well, maybe I can achieve that if I keep at it. And then that's kind of in different ways is the same as it is today. There are wonderful songwriters and musicians, and I've been able to play with lots of the people that I grew up listening to, people like Jack Bruce from Cream and Gary Brooker from Procol Harum, and Eric Burdon, who played with the Animals. I got to play House of the Rising Sun with Eric Burdon and a string quartet, and a lot of jazz guys like Anthony Jackson and some of the great contemporary jazz rock musicians that have, sadly, many of the people are no longer with us.
We are speaking with Ian Anderson. You might know him best from Jethro Tull on News Radio 930 WBEN. Ian, you talked about some of the jazz musicians who basically made the transition into more of the pop field. And obviously, there's much that has been said about Barney Kessel and all the others involved in the Wrecking Crew. Is there a part of Ian Anderson that wishes you could throw those people together and redo some of what you've done and put together a new Wrecking Crew type of organization and do it that way?
No, I couldn't stand the competition. It's great to play with people that you hugely admire and have done great things, but I rather think that you're like ships passing in the night. You make that brief little contact and you have a little moment and have a cheery wave, and then you perhaps never see those people again. And as I was saying earlier, sometimes it's because they're no longer with us. So many of the great performers, John Lord from Deep Purple passed away. Craig Lake from Emerson, Lake and Palmer, I played with a few times, he passed away. And Bruce, of course, passed away. Victor Bailey, jazz musician, he passed away. So there's a lot of those folks that, I kind of think, well, I'm glad that finally, after so many years, I did get to play with them just the once before it was too late. And for all I know, there are people who say the same about me.
Oh, I'm sure they're legion. I do have a quick guitar question that I must obtain more information from you. One of your musical regrets in life, and we all have them, was trading in a vintage Provenance Fender Stratocaster in exchange for an old Shure microphone and a silver flute. At the risk of asking you to repeat a story you've told a zillion times, would you mind?
Well, back in 1966, 67, I played electric guitar and sang only because nobody else in the band could sing. So I was by default the singer and the guitar player. And my skills as a guitar player were fairly rudimentary. And when I heard Eric Clapton for the first time when he joined John Mayall's band, then I realized he was, a good way ahead of where I would be. Even if I practiced hard for a couple of years, I thought I'd probably not catch up on this guy because he is so far ahead of the rest of the field. And not only Eric Clapton, but of course there were other rumors about these hotshot guitar players down in London, people like Jimmy Page and Ritchie Blackmore, Jeff Beck. These were daunting performers to be trying to catch up with. And I thought maybe I should try to be a big fish in a small pool and find an instrument that other people don't really play in the context of blues and rock and roll, or whatever. And for no particularly good reason, I just stumbled on the flute in a music store and said, "Will you take my guitar in part exchange for that and something else?" And I ended up with a $40 flute and a Shure microphone for a beaten up old Strat. But of course, it was a '60s Strat belonging to Lemmy Kilmister, who was then in a band in Blackpool and switched to playing bass. So he had it, I had it, and being a 60 Strat anyway, probably would have been worth rather a lot of money today. Of course, I wish I'd kept it, but I couldn't afford it, and so I switched to the flute, and a few months later I managed to get a few notes out of the flute, and then it turned out to be the best investment I had made, really. It served me very well, and the fact that it was a pretty awful flute, at least it got me started. And so from a very good, wonderful guitar to a very third-rate student model flute, it might seem like a step backwards, but in fact it was a giant leap, if not for mankind, at least for Ian Anderson.
We're talking to you, Ian Anderson, through the marvels of technology, and I would like you to tell us about the song you put together to thank the heroes of COVID-19.
And say thank you. This song is written by the fears we face at the wrong time, at the wrong place, by chasing chances, some of us run.
Could you say a few words about technology and how you've been able to stay ahead of the curve on that?
Well, first of all, I didn't really put the song together. It was a song by a friend of mine in Germany, a producer by the name of Leslie Mandurki, who often gets together a number of the good and the great from rock music and jazz, and does records and sometimes short tours and concerts. And he asked me if I would add something to this song. And, to begin with, I just really, I can't be bothered, I haven't got time. And busy doing other things. And I listened to the song and thought, yeah, this guy's okay. But I asked him to send me the lyrics. And when I looked at the lyrics and thought about it a bit more, I was intrigued that it was very simple and direct. But, I rather liked the reference to the supermarket workers and perhaps that it was recognizing not just the obvious frontline people in the medical world, but all of society that is trying to keep things ticking over at the moment. And so I put my other activities aside for a few hours and recorded a bit of vocal and a bit of flute. Sent it back to him that evening, and the next day he said, "Well, can we make a video?" I had to record some imagery as well to send to him. But it was all done really sitting at my office desk. I wasn't in a studio, just sitting there with my computer and a music recording program and a nice, good quality microphone. I just did that, and he stitched it all together alone in his studio, because his wife is in fact a frontline medic, and so the whole family are in a kind of isolation lockdown. She goes to work looking after sick people, and they all wash their hands as often as I do. So he was alone in the studio at his end. I was sitting in my office, and that's the technology, of course, that we do have. And I very often play on other people's records and can't be bothered crossing over to go in my studio to do it. So I just sit in my office when it gets quiet in the evening and do some recording and send it back. So it's quite easy to do. I mean, really, these days, most young teenagers in their bedrooms can make records that are of a considerable better technical quality than we were able to do in the 60s and 70s.
Ian Anderson, I do know that you have other interviews and other commitments coming up to which you must live up, and I do want to thank you so much for joining us in Buffalo, New York, and I must tell you that it has been a great pleasure and an honor to speak with somebody who's not just one of the greatest performers of all time in music, but truly one of the great minds in rock and music history, and I'm delighted to have had this conversation with you.
Well, very nice to talk to you too, and I hope you and all your listeners are able to stay safe and bug-free, and that we can all look forward to happier times in the months to come. Well, yeah, great to talk to you. Take care.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Ian Anderson. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.